Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, middle of the work week, July the 5th, 2017. 13 minutes after the hour. Hope you had a great July 4th. And as I said, this hour, we are going to remember and look back on one of the most infamous figures in Ohio history. The Reverend Leroy Jenkins, headquartered out of Delaware, Ohio, the faith healer, the man that he was. He died June 21st at the age of 84. This is an interview I did with Reverend Jenkins in 2012. I don't think it's been heard since then. So here is the late Reverend Leroy Jenkins in his own voice. Hope you enjoy this. This was some interview, to say the least.
This is Scott Spears, and today we're joined by one of the most colorful figures in the history of Ohio, to say the least, the Reverend Leroy Jenkins. Reverend Jenkins, how are you?
I'm very well, Scott. Thank you.
You know, Reverend, you've been on with me, I believe, once before. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And one thing I don't think we've ever talked about was your childhood. What was your childhood like?
Well, looking back, it was very wonderful. My mother was very poor. We didn't have a whole lot, but we had the love. And it overshadowed the poverty part of not having things that we really needed. And I really miss being a boy and miss sitting around the fireplace and chunking wood into the fireplace in our living room in our little small house that I went back later and bought in Greenwood, South Carolina, and renovate them and move my family in each one of the houses, and a lot of great memories.
Now, you mentioned your mother there. She was also what they call, I'm not sure if she was a faith healer, but I know they've called her a televangelist. She was also in that field, wasn't she?
Yes, my mother was converted into my ministry and started traveling. And, of course, I would advertise for her as Leroy Jenkins' mother. And she had a lot of great things that happened, and people still call and talk about the things that she did in their life that helped them.
Now, Reverend, the thing I would say, in my opinion, that you're most known for is healing people. Did she have that power also?
Yes, she did.
She did. When did she realize she had that power?
I think my mother realized it, as I did, early in her life. And I actually was born with it. I remember when I was 3 months old, and the first picture that was taken of me, and my mother said, "I don't remember that," so the picture surfaced when my grandmother died. And I was the only one that they carried pictures of from an infant up until right now. It was so amazing. There are very few pictures of my two brothers and two sisters. They were mostly of me.
Now, go ahead.
Could I ask you a question? Do you know of this James Randi?
I've heard of the name.
Yeah, well, he wrote a book called Faith Healers.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is out of line, you tell me. But anyways, I'm answering his call. He said anyone that could document a miracle, that he would give $1 million to. And so I put an ad in the Columbus Dispatch, and I challenged anybody that could prove to me a fake or a phony. And he claims that he came back with that challenge. And then in his book, he writes, Mae West or Liberace, or any of these big stars that Jenkins claims to have known intimately, they denied knowing him. So I'm sending him pictures at numerous times in different years of Mae West and me, Liberace and me, James John Derrick, Bo Derrick, Linda Evans, Barbara Stanwyck, and a host of these things, and to challenge what he said in his book.
Now, he questioned your relationships with these celebrities. Did he question? It sounds like he also might have questioned your ability to heal people. Were you ever able to prove him wrong on that level?
Yes, definitely. There was a baby 3 months old that was born with no irises. The father was a brain surgeon and a eye surgeon, and the mother was an RN. And I've got a disc with this miracle that happened. It was documented along with many more that I gave to National Geographic when they did Is It Real? And at the end they said definitely it was real, and they took it. They still play it after several years.
Reverend, if somebody goes to one of your revivals and they're ill, can they be healed? Can anybody be healed, I guess is the question. What is the criteria?
Well, the Bible says without faith, it is impossible to please God, but with faith, all things are possible. So I would say yes. A lot of people that come and say they believe, they actually really are trying to see if it is real, and that is not the way it works. 100% faith will work every time. But the 12 disciples that were with Jesus passed a boy on the road, and they couldn't do anything for him. And Jesus said, because of the lack of your faith, nothing happened. So Jesus took his finger and touched his tongue and touched the boy's tongue, and he became where he could talk and hear.
Well, Reverend, just for a second here, I want to go back to your mother for a moment, because I didn't realize that she also had the power to heal. Now, did she know that, and was she doing that before you knew that, and you could do it?
No, she was not doing it, but she believed it.
And it let's go through the story for those who don't know. It's a very popular story, but about your arm and when you first realized it.
Well, I had a plate glass window to fall through my right arm, a heavy plate glass window, and it severed my right arm. And I was in a Georgia Baptist hospital for 11 or 12 days, and they sewed it back and put a cast on it, but they wanted to amputate it. And Reverend A.A. Allen, an evangelist, was in Lakewood Park in Atlanta, Georgia. And a lady named Miss Block that worked for me in my piano store was going there. And she came when she saw in the newspaper that what had happened to me. She said, if you'll come, God, I'm going every night. I've been watching miracles happen. So my sister and I went. And I'm sitting on the back row with the two ladies, one being my sister. And one of the guys walked up on the stage and handed a newspaper article about me. And then he sang a couple of songs and he talked. He said, where's the young man that cut his arm off? Come up here. So I went down the aisle, got to the front, and he said, Reverend Rogers, help him up on the stage. I was very weak, just out of the hospital. And he said, I cannot heal you, but I can pray for you, and I can believe with you, but you have to believe too. And a man jumps up and runs around this big tent with one arm and a cold sleeve flapping in the wind. I said, God, if there be a God and this is real, I said, he has one arm, he's happy. I said, give me what he has. And that very moment, I was healed. And Alan said, oh, he said, I didn't even have to pray for him. So there again, the act of faith is the point of contact. And a lot of times, I'm sure you know this, I send these little package of blessed water out that I drilled from a well in Delaware, Ohio. And people from the point of contact, many thousands of miracles happen through this, like Jesus told everybody something to do before they were healed. Told a man that had leprosy, go wash in the pool of Siloam, and he came back cleansed. And told the lot of different things he would tell people to do. And if they were obedient and did it, they would be healed.
What made you, Reverend, I think something that's interesting about you is what you do really is, forget the faith healing here for a second, the show that you put on. I mean, you wear very extravagant costumes. You put on one heck of a stage show. Where does that part of it come from? Was that in your blood? I know you've also recorded some albums.
Yes. I was always sort of like that. I always wanted something real nice, and if I had to, when I was a boy, I cut my brother's pants off and hemmed them up and wore them to a play they were giving at school, and they had me to stand up on the piano and sing a Christmas song when I was six. And so I went to the carnival down about a block from my house in Greenwood and had a picture made, and I felt to do that, and these pictures I've used all the way through my ministry. And also, God told me to go back and fulfill a statement of prophecy that I made when I was 9 years old. I'm coming back to Greenwood as a very well-known person, and I'm buying both of these blocks of houses, and I'm going to make all of you people move. And that actually happened.
So you're going back to Greenwood, and you're making all of, who's moving?
I went back to Greenwood after I became well-known and bought the two blocks of houses where I lived as a boy.
Oh, okay, yeah, we had talked about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
So, this I'm putting all this on my web page on the internet. I'm showing all these pictures of these celebrities, and I'm showing the story that he wrote and said that he contacted these people and they didn't know who I was. Mm. And, you know, it's just something to satisfy my mind and for people to be able to pull it up on the internet and see that you can't believe everything people write about a person.
Why do you think this James Randi is out to do this to you?
Well, he's out to make money because he has a nonprofit organization himself, and he's trying to pull people to his organization by telling untrue things about others. And he has said some true things about evangelists that I know to be the truth. But he said, he's never said I was a fake or a phony. But he said, I look at people's pigmentations, and that's how I can tell them what's wrong with them. Mm. And I said, that is a miracle. If I can do that, doctors and x-rays cannot do that. So that was a compliment. It wasn't meant to be, but it was.
Let me ask you this, Reverend Jenkins. We just talked about the way you dress on stage and the country music singing career. Do you think that has hurt you in the long run, being a faith healer, that maybe people think you are a phony because your revivals are a lot of show business, have a lot of show business aspects?
Actually, the Bible says men look on the outward appearance, but God looked at your heart. And Mahalia Jackson was a good friend of mine for years, and she wouldn't sing without she had a robe on. It's just something, I dress normal in a suit and I don't feel good. I don't look right, and I've packed out. Nobody has broken the records where I have been, including Cincinnati and Madison Square Garden and McCormick Place. Nobody, I had tens of thousands people turned away, and I was wearing the same clothes.
So maybe it's been a help.
Yes.
Yeah. Reverend, there was a movie made about your life in 2002. Robert Wagner was in that. Did you like that movie?
Actually, no.
Why didn't you like it?
Well, first of all, the guy that, Damon Chapa, he is from Columbus, Ohio. And his dad brought him to me when he was 9 years old to the Ohio Theater. I had a red coat on, and from that day on, his dad said he wanted to be like me. And then he went through all kind of drug problems, and finally he went to actor school and became an actor, and has done some pretty successful movies. But this one, a lot of people, oh, I love your movie. Well, they don't know the real story behind it all, so to say the least, he stole the movie and went to Belgium and sold it, went to Germany and sold it, and I had to sue him to get it put back in my name because he changed the name, the title from The Calling to The Man of Faith.
He stole the movie from you?
Yes.
Now, how did he do that?
He took it to Belgium and pretended it was his because he had produced it. And he left out some stuff. And they fell for it. And a man emailed me from Belgium and said he liked my movie and he would like to get to know me better. And I totally disagreed with some of the things he had in there. He portrayed me as a drunk. And he took it back to Hollywood, and Robert Wagner promised me he would help him edit the film. And when he got back, Robert Wagner called me and said, I can't help because he don't want me to. And he said, I just don't want to be bothered with him. And so that's what happened there.
You know, Reverend, one thing I like about you is you answer questions. A lot of people, when bad things happened or dishonest things happened, they just won't even talk about them. I like that you talk about them. And being that you kind of started here 20 minutes up the road in Delaware, Ohio, I do want to go over some things that were done that people probably remember because of the media coverage. And I just want you to clear them up or give your take on them. In 1979, you were, this is probably the one most people remember, you were indicted for threatening assault and arson, and you got sentenced to 5 years in prison. Of course, later that was changed. But what happened there?
Actually, what happened there, I went back to Greenwood, South Carolina, and I bought some property there, and I bought the houses where I was raised. And I was going to open a newspaper, and I found a red press, a candy apple red press, about 50 feet long. And I bought a building with big showcase window. And the Index Journal said Leroy Jenkins is opening a newspaper. And so they came after me trying to hurt my reputation and put an agent there and had a proctor that admitted he burnt my house while I was at the Atlanta Braves throwing the first ball out. And all that was proven, but they gave him a ticket and sent him out of town. I exposed the mayor, Tom Wingert, and Willie T. Jones, the solicitor, and the Judge Moore. And I got up in front of several thousand people in Greenwood, the Civic Center, and I told them about it. And I said, they're hauling drugs in here, and the plane crashed on my attorney's property, and they cut the two heads off where they couldn't be identified. And when I got up and made that, they came after me big time, and they would not allow nobody to testify in my behalf. They pull up to people, black people, and Ann Mayo, a black lady, Detroit, Michigan, was one of them. And people don't believe it, she's alive and well, and she would be happy to go on your show or program and talk about it, what they did when they came there to help me. They ran them out of town. And so the big story is the truth came out. A senator that number one senator from Orangeburg, South Carolina, he called me and he said, I want you to come to my office. He said, my daughter has a decorating, a large one in Atlanta, Georgia, and she wants me to come and see you. He said, I have cancer, I'm 85 and I'm dying. And he said, Jesus Christ told me to do something for you. He said, they tried to involve me in helping them, and I would not do it. So he gave me what they never failed to say. They gave me a pardon and an apology. I talked to the deputy commissioner the day before yesterday, Jesse Strickland from Columbia, South Carolina, and he's very familiar with what they did. But they never bother to tell the whole truth. And these articles that people will be able to look up, it'll be on LeroyJenkins.com. Yeah, www.LeroyJenkins.com. And they can see the real truth and the articles that was written in the paper. Everything backfired on them. They actually gave me 20 years and suspended to 12, and I did 3 years and 8 months.
What was it like to be in prison?
Well, to be honest with you, I left there with a trophy. I left there with a plaque. They made me a supervisor, a part of the warden and the deputy warden. I was given an honorary plaque, and I have it. It's also going to be on the internet for people to see. And the mayor got Tom Wingard. His mother and daddy owned a drugstore when I was a boy growing up. And after he did this to me, he's a part of it. They found that he was faking stuff about prescriptions with people, and he said he'd never been in jail, and the newspaper said he had never been in jail before, but he had been. But they looked over that, and he moved to some part of South Carolina because the news was on him pretty hot. And so I have a total clear record. In this book, James Randi said, Leroy James saw all kind of problems in prison and so and so and so and so. And wrote that they found two bottles of whiskey over a work shed that I had a key to. And they moved me back into maximum security. And then they found the truth. The SLED agent next door over South Carolina found it was residues was 9 years old. And so I have all of those articles, and I'm putting all this on the internet because I actually don't care what people think, you know. If they can believe what they want to. I have my life to live. I please God, and I'm not trying to please anybody else. I'm just trying to. And in this paper, Scott, Greenville, Piedmont, liquor charges in prison dropped against evangelists. And Columbus UPI charges that evangelist Leroy Jenkins had liquor in prison have been dropped. They didn't, James Randi didn't bother to put that in there.
Well,
and all I'm asking him to do is a simple apology. And I'm sure he's not going to do that. But he had no earthly idea that I have all these articles. And I've got a write-up where I have been written up more than any one single person.
Now, Reverend, is James Randi, is he here in Ohio?
No, James Randi lives partly in L.A. and in Fort Lauderdale.
Now, if we got, at some point in the future, if we got James Randi on the phone, would you be willing to come back on with him?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can work that out in the future. I do want to move on, though. Another thing that came up while you were here in Ohio, I'm just clearing all this up. In 2001, you married a 77-year-old widow who hit the Ohio lottery for $6 million. The marriage was later annulled when she was declared incompetent. What happened there?
Well, actually, what happened, They were in, I prophesied to her in front of the Ohio Theater. I said, God tells me you will be a millionaire. And she said, okay. And I hand her a dollar. I said, come there tomorrow. Leroy Jenkins, 11:30, Sunday afternoon on the marquee at the Ohio Theater. So she came, her and her husband. And they started coming to my church. They came 24 years. He hit the lottery. It wasn't six, it was 20 million. And then they moved to South Carolina. She called my office and said her and her husband are moving back to Ohio, but they don't have any place to go. So I gave them a place. They used to come to my house every Saturday and spend a night and go to church there, same parking lot. And he got sick and they cut his limbs off. He asked me in front of several people, he said, will you take care of my wife? All right. They were broke before they knew. When we moved their stuff into my house, I asked permission to go through it. 4 o'clock in the morning, I had found $375,000 in a bank account in South Carolina and several million dollars still in Ohio that they didn't know. I called my attorney, which he'll verify this, and told him what happened. And he said, well, I can't represent her because I'm your attorney. So he got an attorney. We took, and she said, no, I want you to have this money. You found it? I said, no, I can't take it. And all this is, I can prove. I don't make statements if I cannot prove it. And so her sisters came and her nephews, and they were in my kitchen in Delaware, Ohio, on Sandusky Street. I put a tape recorder up on top of the refrigerator and turned it on, and I said, I have to leave for a while. In the conversation they had, there's another black lady that was there, knows I'm telling the truth, would also go on your show. And they said, we're going to put her crazy ASS in a nursing home. And she had more sense than all of them put together. And so my attorney said to me, he said, why don't you temporarily marry her and then they can't do nothing with her? Now, if I wanted the money, I found it. I prophesied it into their life. And so she left $5 million to my association in her own handwriting, not a misspelt word, great penmanship. And they took, after she gave them all money, gave one a house, gave one $100,000, gave them all something, at my request, they came back and took all the $5 million because the attorney, what was his name, Mary, the attorney, that one of them was Ben Espy, he was a black attorney, he wound up in charge of everything she had. She gave me absolutely nothing except in the will that she left. She bought me a leather jacket for Christmas and things of that nature, which I bought her stuff. And the woman, I loved her dearly, not as a wife, but as a companion in helping to save her and what she had. That those people absolutely would have probably, no telling what they would have done to her. And so people in my church, thousands of people knew me, knew her. And did I think I'm going to get publicity out of this? Of course I did. I didn't care because I was helping her, and I promised her husband. And again, I did not need her money. She didn't need what I had. And so it was a mutual understanding. When we went to Las Vegas, her sister claimed to be going to get her clothes, and she went to the police department, which they knew me very well in Delaware, and said he's going to take her out of the country. We had rented a place, her and her sister, which Mary Dredford lived in my house along with her. That was the guarantee that she would stay there with her. And that's exactly what happened. And they got selfish and greedy, and the newspaper articles can prove what they did. They said they called her crazy, and they sent a man there to interview her, and he said, "I see nothing wrong with this woman at all." So they didn't accept that. They sent another one that wasn't even licensed to get up in the courtroom, would not let her testify in her own behalf. I said, if you think she's crazy, people would pick up on it, so let her testify in her own words. They put her in a cheap nursing home, and that's where she died. I had her lifting weights on the treadmill, the Columbus Dispatch, and all the TV stations carried the story. And I couldn't, until this day, I am not sorry that I did what I did. I'm just sorry that I didn't listen to her and put all the money in a trust in her name. That she didn't want that. She said, it's caused me a lot of problems. And that is the truth.
Reverend, the last thing I want to talk about along these lines is in 2003, your miracle water was allegedly found to contain chloroform bacteria by the Ohio Department of Agriculture. What was that all about?
Okay, get the water test in Columbus. Actually, what happened, I'm accurate, and I keep records of everything, things that could be insignificant to most people. I keep them. I had the water tested every 3 months, and I have the articles. I have copies of them where the water was above normal to drinking water. And if you plan to have me back on your program, I will have Barry to email these to you with the dates on them and all the tests that say that. They came to my house and said, if you'll put something to make the water bitter, it will be okay. I said, why would I want to do that? And they made an issue and they lied through the whole thing. And I'll be happy, Scott, to send these to you and let you see for yourself.
You know, I would love to do that, Reverend, because I find it fascinating. But why do you, we just went through three stories there, and we've talked about James Randi. Why do you think so many people in your life have been out to get you?
I really cannot answer that except perhaps jealousy. They want to sell newspapers, and I was a good guy for that.
Reverend, a lot of this has to deal, it seems like the central focus in this, whether it's James Randi selling books, or the lottery money, or the selling of the miracle water, or the arson charges, it all seems to center around money. Are you a wealthy man?
No.
Without saying, because I'm not going to ask that, you can say if you want, but what would you estimate is your net worth, and how do you live? Modestly? Immodestly? How do you live?
I live in a three-bedroom house that I bought several years ago, and I'm a painter, decorator, my father was, and I took the house and renovated it, and I probably owe more on it than it's worth, and like I say, I don't make statements that I can't prove. My banker will tell you that. I'm very conservative with other people's money. Mary's worked for me. She's standing right here beside me. She worked for me 38 and a half years, and she knows exactly what I'm saying is nothing but the truth. One of the reports, April the 10th, 1997, Dr. Maastricht, 687 Evening Street, Worthington, Ohio, 43085. Dear sir, the following is a report of the analysis of water samples received April the 2nd, 1997, analyst number 76244. Bacteria count on average 2 days, 35%. The above bacteriological analysis shows this water to be well within the limits of a safe drinking water.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I'm glad you gave us that. Reverend, why did you leave Ohio? You no longer make your home here.
First of all, I really got tired of news people sitting outside my gate. I had to go out the back gate to get away from them. They would set their towers up there live. And also, I beat the IRS twice, as you know, in the courtroom, and they've never been beat before, because they couldn't find nothing wrong with my association. And they made me a member of the Criminal Department of Investigation of the IRS.
So just for privacy reasons, you left Ohio?
That's the reason I left. I got tired of being badgered by the news media.
Would you ever
not telling the truth.
Would you ever come back here and live?
I wouldn't say I wouldn't, because I love the people of Ohio. They were very nice to me, and that's why I went there to begin with.
How many people would you say you've healed over the years?
Well, none, but through faith, thousands. I've got records of countless thousands of people that's been healed from the baby, which you would be shocked to see, a three-month-old baby. If you show me a baby that can fake being blind and fake what I have captured on cameras, and if everybody could see these things, they would see what the truth is. When Delaware badgered me so, they built 4 hotels there because my church was so large, it drew people, busloads of people from all over every weekend. And they took a survey and asked what good Leroy Jenkins has done for Delaware. They said, not that much. So the next following weekend, I told the people, I don't want you to stay at any of these hotels in Delaware. And I sent them up to Worthington. And the Holiday Inn called me and asked me why I did that. That's because you people gave a bad survey that I didn't do any good for you. So now you're saying, you want me to bring the people back? I said, no way. I don't turn around.
Being a reverend, do you believe in forgiveness in a situation like that?
Yes, I do. I believe in forgiving, but I don't believe in being ignorant and going back and have it done again.
Reverend, I have to ask this question, and I think you've addressed it to somewhat in this interview. To people like James Randi and all those people who accused you of things, to those people, because I think there is a group of them out there who say Leroy Jenkins, Reverend Leroy Jenkins, is not doing what he says he does. He's a performer. He's not a healer. He's a performer. What do you say to those people?
I say I'm both.
How so?
Yeah, because, see, I would not waste my time to go to a church that's boring and the preacher up telling you that God don't do miracles today, when the Bible plainly says, Jesus said, follow me and these works that I do, the same can you, even greater works than these can you do, for I go unto the Father. So everything I base it upon what the Bible says. He says, if you have faith and you're obedient, you can have the good of the land.
You know,
but I work with my hands. I paint. I plumb. I carpenter. I do a lot of stuff because I enjoy doing it. And I, like I say, I'll give you any information in writing to rebuttal everything they've said.
Reverend, I just have one question for you here. When somebody comes up and wants to be healed, and they do have the faith, have you ever taken money personally from somebody to heal them?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Because I think you've been accused of that.
Oh, yeah, but see, the accuser can't prove it. But I can prove that a man offered me $10,000 to fly to New York and pray for his wife in the hospital. I said, that is not the way I do it.
How do you choose who you do?
I choose to be led of the Spirit, like the Bible said. And when I have a group of people, I say, if there's a one of you that don't believe God talks to me about you, come up here. I do that every crusade I go to. And if they don't come, that's not my problem.
Do you ever think of retiring and living a private life?
No.
No. Why not?
I wouldn't know. I'd be bored to death.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Reverend, being in Ohio, you certainly do have a very well-known name here, and a lot of people have a lot of identification with you. And I really have enjoyed talking with you, and I hope when you do come back to Ohio, you'll come down and be in the studio, and we can do a face-to-face interview, and I think a lot of people would enjoy that.
Yeah, well, I'll do it, and I'll bring all of these documents that I have.
Perfect. Reverend, I thank you for sparing the time to talk with us today.
Well, you're certainly welcome, Scott, and I really appreciate that you keeping in touch with me.
Hey, no problem.
I can say that you asked questions. I hope I answered them correctly for you. And as I said, if anybody's listening wants any kind of proof from me, look on the internet. It'll be posted there, and you can see how things happen. And how the mayor and the chief of police, you remember they arrested me for a DUI there one time?
I remember that.
Okay, and I sued them for $100 million. And the mayor, and I went straight to the hospital and got a blood and a urine test. And they met me at Green Meadows and apologized. I had a tape recorder. They had one in their pocket. And when we finish the conversation, I said, by the way, I have all this on the recorders too. I know you have one, so do I.
Right.
So,
yeah.
All of it was unfounded.
It's certainly been an interesting life and definitely an interesting interview today. And like I say, when you come back to Ohio, I really do hope you make the time, schedule it in to come up to the studio, and we'll talk live on the air.
All right, and I certainly will do that. And like I say, if you want to do something further, I'll send all this to you, and you can listen to what they say and then what the truth is.
Well,
and this senator's name was Marshall Williams.
Well, I will definitely take the information and see what comes of it. Talking with Reverend Leroy Jenkins, certainly a very fascinating interview. Check out his website. This has been Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And that was
this
the interview with Reverend Leroy Jenkins, who died June 21st at the age of 84. And we did get to do the in-studio interview. If anybody has any thoughts on that, we have about 4 minutes left, 56 minutes past the hour here. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Do you have any memories of the Reverend Leroy Jenkins, or any thoughts on the interview that we just played here, or did you ever go to anything he was involved with? He was certainly an interesting figure, and I am glad he did get to come to the studio, or at least the rec center, and do an interview. And again, that interview was videotaped, and that is on the internet. If you go to YouTube and search Scott Spears, Leroy Jenkins, that should come up, because that interview was from 2012, and I believe the one on the internet that we did in person, videotaped, was from 2013. So, again, the Reverend Leroy Jenkins, if you had not heard, passed away, died. Here, see, I'm saying passed away, too. Died June 21st of this year at the age of 84. A lot of people loved him. A lot of people hated him. But you can't deny the fact that he was an interesting figure in Ohio's history. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. 57 minutes past the hour. Would love to hear from you on the toll-free line. Just your thoughts on the Reverend, or maybe your thoughts on that interview. I know a lot of people had very strong feelings about him. They either loved him to death or hated him with a passion. There was no middle ground with the Reverend in any way, and that's kind of interesting. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Scott, I have a real quick question for you.
Go right ahead.
With Leroy, it's been rumored that he was actually the brother of Conway Twitty, the country artist who passed away. Have you had any confirmation on that?
You know, that's interesting. If you would have asked Reverend Jenkins about that, he would have said yes. If you would ask other people, they would say no. So, and all those documents he was talking about, to be honest with you, I never did see them. He did not send them to me. He did come and do the interview in the studio. He did do that. But I can't remember him bringing documents. I don't remember ever seeing any documents. So I don't know what that was about. And I did have James Randi on the show years later, but I think the Reverend was ill by that point.
Well, I guess it's a mystery that no one will ever have the answer to, huh?
No, they're both gone now.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And again, if you have any questions, give me a call. Any thoughts? That's a good question, and it's always interesting. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I had heard that he was the brother of Conway Twitty, but I doubt that it's true, but I can't say for sure, so I don't know. It's a funny life. It's a funny life. Let's put it that way. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Scott, I'm not for sure on, but I do know that Conway Twitty's real name is Harold Jenkins.
Well, there might have been some connection. I don't know. If you were a betting man, do you think he was the brother?
That I wouldn't want to say for sure, you know, but that's what I do know from back history of reading up on the Conway. That was his name, but I don't know as far as relation-wise if that'd be it or not, you know.
I understand. Well, hey, I thank you for the information. Thank you for listening.
Well, I got something else to say. My mom was totally involved with, like, Leroy Jenkins. That
yeah.
She would send for the oils and everything like that, and that kind of brought things up when I listened to the interview. And she's a strong believer in him and believed he really worked and made miracles happen.
Well, see, and that's what I said. I think he probably did con people, but for the people who believed him, he did give them something.
Yeah, and as far as I don't know how he worked it, but, you know, she picked quite a bit of money and sent to him, too. So
do you think
somehow
he was,
they worked out for donations.
Do you think he was legitimate?
No.
I
that's my opinion, but, you know, opinion, we all have different ones.
Some people swore by him. You're exactly right. Well, I'm glad that brought up that memory.
All right, Scott.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Hey, and he did bring people joy. You can't deny that. I mean, you can say a lot of things about him, but he did bring people some kind of joy. There were a certain group of people. That's all today. We'll talk some more about this tomorrow if you want to. But for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Factor in.
No, because I say the work is its own reward.